Yet in Jail. It's your host, Bathrop Spear, Robert Norris, for 2 hours of live, but as of yet, no phone line on the show. Bathrop Spear's broadsides from 10 to 12 today, Civil Rights for the Poor, here at 96.3 FM. And we're hoping we can get a line in so you can actually call us and give us a little flack, at least a little feedback. Our co-host is Becky Johnson, who's struggling to get at the mic here.
Hello, Santa Cruz.
Wow. I think...
Did that work?
I think so. It's hard to tell. Say something again.
Something again.
Very good. Very good. Excellent. And in the background, of course, we have that singer of singers, Roy Bailey. Bailey's a English folk singer who sings political and topical songs. This is from the album Talking Horses, or is it Stalking Horses? I don't know, because I left the box outside the studio. Hey, stay with us, listen to a little music, and we're going to have an interesting show for you today. Of course, a report from the court. I was there, as was reporter Becky Johnson here. Also, we have interviews with Jane Immler, Ron Howard, Keith McHenry, and a host of other people if we can find the tapes. I think we have at least one of those tapes. So stick with us, listen, and if you have stuff you want to respond to, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833, 423-4833, and that is going to be my phone at home for a while, at least until June 7th, and more about that in a moment. That's a phone number that you can use to record your criticisms, commendations, and just general reactions to the show. Anything you want on the air, 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Interviews. The next voice you're going to hear is going to be that of Jane Immler, or Calamity Jane, as I call her. She calls herself, actually. She's one of the people who dubbed herself a name, and I was forced to take it up. Normally, I don't let that happen, make up my own names. Are you live, Becky?
I think I'm live. Let me take my pulse.
Yeah, I think, let me take a look. Definitely very live.
98.6.
Yeah, it's definitely got some life in her. Calamity is back in Missouri, but while she was here, as those of you who've listened to my past interviews with Jane know, she was quite active in Santa Cruz as a homeless activist. In fact, her hunger strikes in the mid-80s resulted in the beginnings of some of the substantial social services. Substantial may be an exaggeration, but some of the social services we have now for homeless people, such as...
Yeah, well, Paul Lee was inspired by Jane Immler's hunger strike to open the Cedar Street shelter as a direct result of her action.
That's right. And she actually was a person whose hunger strike in 85 prompted the forming of Paul Lee's Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which Becky Johnson is, of course, a board member of, and I am a refugee from. So let's hear a little of this interview with Jane Immler. We're joining it in mid-interview. It's kind of a choppy show today. This is my first show in the new studio, and I'm hoping that all will go well. Again, I wish that you could be with us, at least have access to us on the phone, and we're hoping that that'll be rectified soon. Right now, however, here's Jane.
Well, we're talking to Jane Immler, and it's May 17th, 1996. Hi, Jane.
Hi, Robert.
This is tape two. And Jane, let's see, what were we talking about? We've been talking about the injunction. We've been talking about history of soup serving, illegal soup serving, and how activism has produced changes in Santa Cruz. We're talking about the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, which is, again, about to engage in another fundraising venture around its community house project.
Well, I thought they just go to the city, and the city...
Well, they have gone to the city, and the city is giving them bucks, or at least is lending them bucks, and also opened it out and trying to waive some more permit fees and so forth. And the interesting thing is that there are a few council members, Celia Scott and Catherine Byers, who are willing to privately, they're meeting with activists around the protest, trying to determine ways of getting information that will be helpful in incrementally destroying the sleeping ban, though they are still unwilling to, for example, bring up a full debate on the sleeping ban for fear they will lose, not realizing that sometimes you have to lose a few battles in order to win a few. Nonetheless, around the Citizens Committee for the Homeless issue, they are unwilling to consider any criticism of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. And Celia Scott, who was on the board of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless for 6 years and is no longer on the board, is still not simply unwilling to hear criticism or uninterested in discussing that. But she and Byers, I believe, directly misled me when I attempted to... There was a major city council hearing on this $150,000 appropriation for the Citizens Committee, and that was last Monday. And the council, we had a meeting, Celia and Catherine Byers and the protesters and I, earlier in the day about issues around the City Hall sleep-out protest. And we asked her, you know, we pointed out, well, I guess we should come to the budget meeting to talk more about the issues of the homeless issues and so forth. She said, oh, no, there are no homeless issues here, said these two council members. The budget hearing is in June. So we didn't go. And we learned the next day that a $150,000 loan had been granted to Citizens Committee for the Homeless. So we did go to the meeting of the Social Services Subcommittee, which is the Rodkin-controlled group. That's Rodkin, Yokoyama, and Kennedy. And heard the Citizens Committee really fall down badly on its figures. I mean, as I told you before, the list of figures about granting and the grants and what the different projects they were, different funding sources were all garbled. The things just, arithmetically, did not add up. They were, you know, they said it's, they had to take it back to the drawing board. And so they also pointed out that they were looking for a $150,000 grant, not a loan. They put that into that column anyway. And Rodkin said, you're going to have to come back to City Council to do that, so we may have another shot at it. But it does seem that Celia Scott has been a perennial defender of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless and this project. And the same is true with Byers. For 6 months on the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee, which is the group of city council members supposedly looking for a replacement for the campground, they rejected many, many places, place after place that could have been used, you know, Harvey West, the Benchlands, other little pieces of property, the Poganip. All these areas were rejected for one reason or another until they kind of threw up their hands. Well, we have no place, which is, of course, what I told them they were going to do in October. You know, it was all, it wasn't so much, I think they were more self-deluded than anything else, but they obviously don't hold it to be a very high priority because, you know, they were pitching tents around school grounds in the earthquake, if you'll remember.
Right.
And if they wanted to do something, they could do it. They could make an attempt to do it. They could raise their voices on the issue. And so there is this real division in the city council, even with those city council members that we are sympathetic with us, in terms of the question of Citizens Committee for the Homeless. It's an untouchable group, just like Karen Gillette's free meal under Don Lane's administration was also considered an untouchable group.
It is, and it is very interesting because, you know, at one point the Citizens Committee had lost all credibility. And this was, you know, a while back, and they you know, it's amazing what a few years has done.
Now, what can you tell us something about that situation, how and why they lost credibility, and then why perhaps you think they've regained it?
Well, I think my hunch is that they lost the credibility, you know, because they were pretty much running the shelter over there at one point.
You're talking about the River Street mini shelter,
right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there was a lot of alleged abuses going on over there. It was alleged there was drug dealing, that women had to give sex for to get a place in the shelter. And so, there, you know, when all this came to light, the contract was taken away from them and given them to community counseling. And it was after that that things really kind of, you know, went downhill. And then there was the whole issue about what was happening with that land back there that they weren't getting.
You're talking about the land on which Community House now stands, on which a campground stood for 2 years, actually for 8 years, but it was legal for 2 years.
Right. And so, I mean, what exactly turned that around? I don't know. It almost seems like at the point when Paige died, suddenly things, I mean, it obviously it started before then. That's when it, you know, really seemed like they started coming on.
Well, maybe you can do a little research into this for us, Jane. Give a couple calls to the folks at the Citizens Committee and ask them some questions and come up with a report where you can pass on to us the, you know, the results of your investigation.
Well, I guess I could do that. I'm not sure that people will be willing to talk to me, but, you know, they're probably Jane Emler calling from 2,000 miles away. It would generate a little suspicion here. But to get back to that book, I was telling you we talked about.
You're talking about The Quality of Mercy, Paul Lee's
right,
book.
Exactly. I was, you know, sorting through a bunch of papers and books and college textbooks and all this, and upstairs in the what will hopefully become a library someday. And what should I find? Right, buried under all this stuff was The Quality of Mercy.
In case you're wondering what all this is about, audience, Jane Emler is referring to a book written by Paul Lee, who has been, at least up to now, the executive director of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, and perhaps that's changed. Becky might know something about that.
He's the chair.
Still the chair. Anyway, he wrote this book in 91-92, which many of us regarded as being both prejudiced, inaccurate, and also full of omissions about the actual generation of the homeless services in Santa Cruz and who was responsible for what and who did what and so forth. Let's hear more of this tape, shall we?
So that is, you know, that's the first step. I found the book.
I see. Well, this is exciting news. Why don't we spend another 10 minutes discussing it?
Yeah, right. Well, you kept wanting to know when I was going to find the book. Well,
Jane has been promising to do her own version of The Quality of Mercy, corrected Quality of Mercy, and we've been unable to get much out of her in the last 3 years since the book was issued, actually the last 4 years. But hopefully, one of these decades, she will respond.
I found it.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Well, we'll be pleased to hear any new developments on the score. And, you know, there is you can very easily fax us if you get access to a fax machine. The results of your response, you, of course, are referring to your interest in responding to The Quality of Mercy. You actually picketed the book, I guess, when it came to Capitola
yeah, the
Book Cafe.
Yeah.
Do you feel it has a number of inaccuracies and omissions?
Right. I think it was Linda and Tim Ozula, myself, went over to the bookshop there in Capitola, whatever the name of that place is.
Capitola Book Cafe.
Uh-huh.
And you confronted Fred Gray and Paul Lee.
Right. Yeah.
Well, and there's another Citizens Committee for the Homeless meeting coming up again. I guess it's probably the 23rd
of
May. Maybe you should fly back in order to give a public correction on the book.
Their meetings at?
They have their meetings at Garfield Park Church at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, the fourth Thursday of the month.
Do they allow you in?
They don't allow me in. I'm subject to trespass arrest, but they would probably allow you in. Maybe we should go in together and you can get arrested with me.
Yes. Well, I thought you were supposed to keep your act clean for the next 2 years or something like that.
I did not agree to a probation condition, remember?
Okay.
That was the reason.
Right. So 4 o'clock on the May 23rd. Well, you know, if I, in just in the event I don't make it, you could kind of, you know, take in a sculpture of me or something.
No, no, if I go in, I get arrested for trespass, and frankly, I'd rather get arrested in other places for other things than waste my time with the Citizens Committee for the Homeless, unless I had, you know, there were a sufficient number of people or a sufficiently respect-provoking figure like yourself that would, you know, create some stir in the media and also, you know, raise issues that I have tried unsuccessfully, largely, to raise in the last 6 months, which is why the Citizens Committee chosen this costly $1.3 million trailer project over at least continued maintenance of emergency services campground.
Why did they, back up, now you said, this is why they chose...
No, I'm saying I've been asking, why are you choosing to serve 20 to 40 people who are already getting checks anyway, over hundreds of people who need a place to stay at night because of the sleeping ban? And the issue was never discussed.
Well, Robert, now, come on. You obviously, I mean, this is obviously a rhetorical question because you know what the reason is. I mean, it's called greenbacks.
Well, the Citizens Committee for the Homeless is supposed to be more concerned with, let us say, services and needs of the homeless than it is with financial remuneration for its employees or glitzy projects that enable them to engage in more fundraising activity. I suspect you may be right, but I think it really requires a person of your... well, should we say, your historical background, because the Citizens Committee originally formed around trying to assist you, right?
But, you know...
You have to raise this issue yourself, Jane, in order for it to have, I think, an impact. Or at least somebody else other than myself has to raise it.
These guys, I mean, you talk about slippery. I mean, they obviously have written the book on how to, you know, do all the schmuck, make the community believe that they're doing this wonderful stuff. I mean, that's like that homeless garden. I mean... They got this homeless garden up here. They got the homeless people are slaves, if you can get in there, and they're growing veggies for the rich people on the west side. I mean, it's absurd. And then they, you know, they do fundraisers. I mean, you gotta get my blood pressure up.
Beggarbacker Becky, how do you respond as a member of the board of the Citizens Committee of the Homeless to these attacks on the homeless garden, which I think you've been pretty much a defender of?
Yeah, I would say the Homeless Garden Project is probably the Rolls-Royce program of the Citizens Committee for the Homeless. It certainly has been picked up across the nation, and people are really caught up with the positive aspects of transitioning homeless people in the sense that giving them a place to go that's very... pleasant surroundings in a garden. It's very healing to be in nature and among plants. They're taught about organic gardening and organic gardening methods and about... as far as the funding for the Homeless Garden Project, it's kind of roughly broken up into thirds. A third of the funding comes from donations. A third of the funding is self-generated through...
sales to rich people on the west side?
The organic produce is expensive, and it is in any store in Santa Cruz. If you want to buy organic produce, it's more expensive than the commercially grown food. And they do have... a few what they call scholarships where poor people can apply to get these organic produce at greatly reduced prices.
What's the final third of the funding?
The final third of is public funding. From
handouts from the city council?
From the city council and from other
friends on the Citizens Committee for the Homeless.
The CCH does try to cultivate good relationships with the city council. I think at times to the detriment of homeless people themselves.
And why would you say that, Beggarbacker Becky?
Well, because I think the city council has fallen down on a number of issues regarding homeless people, and yet they continue to spout that they are such great supporters of homeless issues. Michael Rotkin repeatedly says that Santa Cruz spends more money per capita on homeless people than any city in the country, which I wouldn't think is something to brag about. You know, how extremely expensive it is and how few people are served. That doesn't seem like something to brag. And I have not heard Citizens Committee for the Homeless raise that issue publicly when they ought to. I am a member of CCH, and I'm raising this independently. I do not have the authority of CCH to raise these issues on their behalf.
And you're a member by the skin of your teeth. As I remember, when you started recording the meetings, or actually you've been recording the meetings for a while, but when you started speaking on behalf of the right to record by members of the public such as myself, and possibly discussing issues like the campground and not excluding people like myself from the meeting simply because we sought to get our just place at oral communication period, conveniently placed in the last 5 minutes of the meeting, as I remember back in December, you were told, hey, we just discovered we've mislaid your board of directors' papers, and goodness gracious, that certainly defused you for a couple of months, didn't it, Becky?
Yeah, it was much to my surprise that I was told that I really wasn't a member, or that I wasn't a full member, and it was news to me, and there was kind of a controversy about that. And
so they got you spinning your wheels, spending all your time reestablishing your membership and talking earnestly to various members on the board of directors to get this resolved, instead of spending your energies to, let's say, get poor excluded activists like myself and Dan Hopkins back into the meeting. Of course, by that time, the appeal had already been lost for the Community House, had won their appeal. The Citizens Committee for the Homeless is now, of course, going for more bucks from the City Council. But again, let's return to the... feel free to respond to anything I've said.
Oh, let me respond to something that Jane said regarding the funding for Community House. I do have one little item to say on behalf of the Community House Project. From what I understand, there is very little government funding available specifically for homeless. There's all kinds of grants that are available for people who are in alcohol or drug recovery or have some sort of mental problems. Of course, these are all the things that require or would tend to have service providers with paid positions that are going to sort of administer services to homeless people, which I know has been a frequent criticism of yours, Robert.
Let me interrupt you.
Mm-hmm, sure.
I mean, that claim has been made, and it was brought up at the Open Air Shelter Subcommittee, which is the city council group. Headed by, who knows, it was headed by, had Byers and Celia Scott and Kennedy stuck his head in every so often, that was charged with finding an alternate campground area. And it met between October and, I guess, March, at which point it disappeared without a trace. There's no campground, there's no committee, and there's no justice. But we all knew that before we started, and we could all predict that. But at that committee, what happened was the same issue was brought up, but there isn't much money for homeless projects. The county representatives to that group, I believe, Andy Schifrin and others kept saying the same thing. Oh, there's no money for any of this, and besides, we don't like campgrounds anyway. That's not a good idea. The county can't support it. There's no political support for it. In fact, Celia Scott found that there were federal funds for campgrounds. There were federal funds for emergency shelter of that sort. And so this, to some extent, is a myth that is being propounded by those who don't want a campground around the area, who don't want to support emergency shelter, because emergency shelter of that sort is less remunerative to subcontractors in terms of salaries. You don't get to hire 3 security guys and 2 case managers and an executive director as you're doing at Community House. You don't get to spend hundreds of thousands of dollars preparing the site. None of that becomes important. Rather, becomes important to provide a campground with rudimentary facilities for people who are coming in and out. And that is not something that this city wants to do, that the Citizens Committee wants to do, and it's not something that the county wants to do. And I think we should blame all three of these groups. But we found out that what the third part of the funding was. I'm going to try to, unless you've got a response to that, which you wanted to give, I'm going to move along.
You know, I'm totally in favor of finding a campground specifically for homeless people in the area. I have petitioned the Citizens Committee for the Homeless to put that at a higher priority. They have expressed a lot of regret over that, primarily because they had a bad experience with the Coral Street open air shelter.
They had a bad experience with the Coral Street open air shelter.
I was not a member of the board at that time, so I'm speaking,
You were a member of the board during the time the Coral Street shelter was open.
At the very end. I was not there
the
when the with the formation of it or the management or anything. I came in the last few months of
the during its greatest usage was the time when you showed up.
Absolutely. There were 200 people there using the campground when they had originally thought, we'll let this be a campground for 75 people. But of course, there's so few facilities for homeless people in the Santa Cruz area, and there's such a lack of affordable housing, and all kinds of reasons why homeless people flocked to this campground, and it was very crowded. And the Citizens Committee for the Homeless did a pretty poor job of accommodating this increased flow of people. They didn't provide sufficient porta potties, for instance. Security was
by a gang of thugs?
I've heard that criticism from many, many sources, although I don't have any personal information on that, and so I can't discount that.
The criticisms I heard of CCH management had to do with their attempts to close it down in spite of the desires of those who wanted to maintain shelter through the winter. But since we've so often gone over this subject, though it always bears repeating, in my opinion, until the issue is addressed by City Council, the Citizens Committee, and generally become a focus in the community. Let's continue with...
Well, I think the issue on our plate here is that we need to find a location and open up a new campground for homeless people, and that this... this is quite relevant in the context of the protest that's currently going on at City Hall, where...
Day 77.
Where homeless people are...
Day 78.
Conducting a 24-hour-a-day vigil to apply pressure on the City Council to modify the camping ban law so that homeless people who have no place to sleep are not criminalized for sleeping.
And, of course, the City Council's most recent response, for those who read the Santa Cruz Urinal, or the Sentinel as it fondly calls itself, is to pass an injunction, instructions to the city attorney, to go to court to get a compliant judge to suspend the First Amendment in order to get rid of this nasty protest that's sitting outside the City Council chambers. They are disappointed and dismayed by the message, so they are going to evict the messengers.
And then, ironically, the centerpiece of this injunction is a pile of poo-poo.
Yeah, that's exactly what most of this stuff around the injunction is, a pile of poo-poo. They're also talking about rats at City Hall, and of course, what they really should do is look in the mirror. Maybe they are looking in the mirror, and they're simply describing what they see. I have never seen a rat at City Hall, other than the mayor, who seems to be, let me put it this way. I have never seen a rat at City Hall of the four-legged variety. I have never seen anybody taking a dump. I've heard of people taking a piss, it's true. But in the main, that problem, of course, could be resolved by giving or lending the demonstrators a key to the restroom, as, for instance, was done with Sherry Connable's Coalition for a Safe Place to Sleep protest in 1990, when there was a 10-day protest there, when there were people camping all over the lawn, and when those respectable middle-class citizens and some homeless people, gotten together by Sherry Connable, had access to restroom facilities. If you do not have access to a restroom, then your only option is to explode, buy a catheter in a bag, or take a dump somewhere else.
What was distinctly missing from Karen Clark's article in the Sentinel on May 15th and the subsequent editorial on May 16th, where they did mention this human excrement, as they called it, at City Hall. They didn't mention that the people at the vigil have repeatedly asked city
to the bathrooms at night.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Rotkin told me that he had offered a key to the bathroom to one of the vigil people, and that with the tag that, oh, well, you'll be responsible if there's any vandalism that occurs, and that this unknown vigiler had said, oh, no, I don't want a key.
Bad choice, Sean. But see, we've been through this story, and I continue to encourage you, Becky, not to repeat it. I mean, you do this every time that this comes up at different public meetings. I think the relevant point is we have asked for access to the bathrooms.
It wasn't
we've
in,
been turned
but
down.
But Robert, it was not in either of the articles, and yet that
right.
seemed the whole both the focus
oh.
of those two articles focused on the fact that there was human excrement at City Hall, and therefore it's a public safety hazard, and therefore that they have justification to get an injunction to shut it down, with no mention that we have repeatedly tried to find 24-hour bathroom facilities.
That's true.
So I think it bears repeating.
It bears repeating, but I don't know if it bears repeating four or five times. We said it several times, and it's true. It's also true that there have been no citations for any of these criminal acts of dumping, pissing, or littering that are allegedly the basis for this injunction.
In fact, Catherine Byers reported that she thought that the vigil had been neat and orderly.
And the vigil ranges from neat and orderly to messy and spaced out. I mean, that's certainly true. But the fact of the matter is, to prove a specific public health hazard seems to me to be a concoction of the sort used by the city when they went after the people serving free food at the town clock back in 1989, the SWAP, Soup Without a Permit team, where I was arrested, as was Jane Immler, as were numerous other people. So,
well, back to this poop thing, though.
Poop.
sorry to dwell on this topic. But no one at the vigil has admitted to having produced this pile of poo. And I guess the city officials came out and they took photographs of this.
Did they do a DNA analysis?
What did it even come from a human? Has that been proved?
What's the real shit on this issue? We'll give you an update on our next Bathrobe Spears broadsides.
And then there was the conspiracy theorists who think that either Scott Kennedy or Mayor Rotkin himself came out by
evidence.
Dark of night, took a dump on the lawn, and blamed it on the campers.
Indeed, it could have been they were so upset by the latest appearance at City Council of the Santa Barbara activists, who indeed showed up in town, by the way, earlier this week. Bob Hansen, or a Beaming Bob, as I call him, Cobblestone Colin Atherton.
And Mr. Free Speech, Mike Rotkin, didn't really appreciate their comments.
These activists come from Santa Barbara, where they are very high profile, been arrested repeatedly. They've been in this business of challenging anti-homeless laws for 20 years, and these guys are really hardcore. And they're going to be back on the streets here in Santa Cruz this afternoon, I'm told.
Today
on Friday, May 17th, downtown in Santa Cruz.
5 to 7 p.m.
That's what they say. They're going to be there with signs urging citizens to boycott businesses downtown unless those businesses choose to support some kind of reasonable solution to the sleeping crisis in Santa Cruz, the crisis of the poor people who are being given a choice of hide out or get out, which is Rotkin's perennial solution to the sleeping ban question whenever it makes its way to his ears.
Oh, he had the third choice. They could get arrested, too. He offered that.
Or go to jail. That's true. And he was saying he was quite happy to accommodate them. That was what they said in his article in the Sentinel, which we spoke to Karen Clark about, actually. Karen Clark is the one of the Sentinel writers. She wrote this article the morning after the city council had decided its injunction policy. That was Wednesday morning. And a number of us, I guess it was Pat Ring, Dominique Von Zavern, a number of other of us came down to
Tim Rinker,
to talk to Karen Clark. Karen declined to return my phone call, and we waited in the antechamber for a while. She finally said two of us could come up. We settled for three, and I guess you and I, Becky, went upstairs and tried to educate Karen about the real concerns, the real facts around the issue of the protests, which were not, for some strange reason,
in her very poorly written article,
being covered by Karen's front page story.
Even the title, you know, Squatters, which she claimed she did not write, but she could not tell us who did write it.
We don't have a story here, but this story has something like squatters to be driven from City Hall or some such was the... I guess, Becky, you have it in your
files. I have it. Yes, I'm so much more together than you, Robert.
And you actually wrote a lengthy response to that story, and I'm still kind of stumbling around with a flyer. Here it is. Santa Cruz lowers legal boom on squatters. They actually haven't lowered any legal boom. They've just instructed our city attorney to spend your tax dollars to essentially get together a costly injunction against homeless people rather than deal with the problem that has them there in the first place. It's not
or open a bathroom. How much does it cost to duplicate a key?
Yeah, that's pretty expensive, and you know, we know that homeless people per se are untrustworthy, so that, of course, is out of the question. I mean, you can give a key to Sherry Connival, but don't give a key to Dan Hopkins. I mean, let's get that clear. Dan Hopkins, or Dragon's Heart Dan, as I call him, is the head of the, one of the heads of the City Hall protest. There are bunches of them. They keep coming back. Even before this injunction has even been drawn up by the city attorney, and we've heard different estimates of when it's going to hit the courts, ranging from...
I believe it's next Tuesday.
Sergeant
my bet is on next Tuesday.
Sergeant Seeley has said that he thinks it's not going to happen for a month because he recalls how it took at least a month from January 1st or 2nd or 3rd of 89 to February, I think mid-February, when the injunction against the town clock feeding operation came out. But it's hard to say. We can anticipate something coming fairly soon, and indeed we were having some emergency mobilizations down there to get people ready to either cart off their stuff or prepare to go to jail or have an assemblage meeting place. I guess we decided tentatively at a meeting that if people are taken to jail in the dead of night and others are dispersed, that if it's raining, we should assemble at the Veterans Hall. If it's not raining, we should assemble in the library overhang. I'm not sure how much of an overhang there is in the library across the street. For all you protest supporters, you might want to keep tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, which we hope by that time will have a phone line in, or maybe we can somehow send a runner to the radio station to discuss that. We actually began this conversation. Maybe we should talk about Karen Clark first, although I don't know how much time she really merits. We really need to do some research. My informal survey of Sentinel coverage of this vigil and of the sleeping ban issue has been that it is pathetic, that they almost never... I mean, I don't want to say never, because they do sometimes quote Dan Hopkins in some quotes every so often. But the actual substance of the issue, which has been modify the camping ban, which is really currently a sleeping ban, to a limit to allow people to sleep, to cover up with blankets, and to, let's say, what they can have what they need to carry around, provided they are not violating existing laws against littering, defecating in public, blocking the sidewalk.
For instance, here's the quote in Karen Clark's article from Dan Hopkins. He says, "We are human beings just like you," said Hopkins. "We have feelings just like you. And we're citizens of Santa Cruz just like you. Please look into your hearts and say, what's the humane thing to do?" Which is a lovely quote from Dan, and who is a lovely person. But it doesn't say anything about the so-called human waste. It doesn't say anything about the altercation with the gardener. It doesn't say anything about the so-called rat problem.
What you're referring to is, of course, quotes from the article which people may not have read. But the point I'm making is that the basic issue around the sleeping ban itself, and what we're actually seeking and what Dan Hopkins is seeking is nowhere referred to in any Sentinel story. Even though Karen Clark vigorously denies that, she has not pointed to any story where she said, what the protesters are looking for is A, B, and C. You don't get to see that, and there's a real reason, a real clear reason that you don't get to see that. Why would you think that reason is?
Well, what we hear time and time again is, the people are at City Hall to protest the camping ban, and what they want is for people to be able to camp anywhere in Santa Cruz, which is not what the protest is about at all.
And the reason that you don't get a clear indication of this, and to answer my own question, is because these people are the tail of the dog of city council on this issue. They are the tail that Rotkin wags. Or let's put it this way. Rotkin is their tail. And they have this fundamental opinion that poor people should not have the same rights that other people have, particularly if it involves such things as being able to sleep at night, and that involves some kinds of social dislocations and disruptions. They should not be allowed to be present in public places because their presence is a reminder.
Post article?
Yeah. Is a reminder of, well, not only what we all must face, but what possession of property and wealth by a few does to many in this situation. I mean, that maybe that's stretching it a bit. Who knows what their motivation is? You've got an article you're about to read, but
I'm just going to read a line from it, actually.
Okay, I mean, that's an article I'd like to go into in some detail, but go for it, unless you're going to...
Yeah. It's in the Mid-County Post. It just came out yesterday. It's written, it's a letter to the editor from Eric Larson, your friend, Robert.
My friend Eric.
And at the very last line, he says, regardless of our philosophical difference, we should never lose sight of the one goal that we share in common. Everyone deserves a safe place to sleep, eat, and live a good life without poverty.
Yeah, well... Since you brought it up, see, we're in the middle of the Jane Immler tape, which sort of disturbs me. I mean, I would have liked to have kind of gone through these issues seriatim, but we have to do what comes up. This is a live situation. So, Eric Larson wrote a letter to the Post here, and Eric Larson, to me, is a rather mixed figure. His complaints about Malkin essentially sparked Malkin's resignation from the board when the Police Review Board failed to support him. Larson's been engaging in various projects in the Beach Flats, some of them commendable, perhaps, some of them not so commendable, in terms of cozy stuff with the cops. Around some issues, in terms of support for tenants, I have no problem agreeing with Eric and no problem supporting him. But this particular quote I find rather...
ironic?
It gives me kind of a wry feeling inside, because this is... Eric is closely related to the Resource Center for Nonviolence. And actually, the whole story is a letter about Riverwoman and Sherry Connable, two activists with houses like myself, or with rooms, who live in houses, who are, or vans. I guess Sherry has a van.
Yeah, Sherry is currently homeless.
Oh, great. You know,
that's
but
not a
Sherry,
good thing, Robert.
Right, no, it's not. But historically, Sherry has lived in a very big house and not been homeless at all. But I guess that's what happens. You get homeless at some points. Anyway, Eric writes a story which he's talking about conflicts between lower ocean people and Sherry Connable and Barbara Riverwoman and the homeless. I'm not quite sure, actually, what the conflict is. It has to do with, quote, byproducts of alcohol and drug use, such as trash, graffiti, feces, beer bottles, needles, condoms, crime, loitering, and offensive encounters with drug customers and dealers. And, you know, I mean, it's natural for you. Know, who wants to have someone shooting up in your backyard or in your, you know, in your front street and all that? I mean, that's natural concern. It's even relevant to prostitution, you know. And it's relevant. I mean, I believe in the right of women to do with their bodies what they choose. I believe prostitution should be decriminalized, and I believe drug use should be decriminalized. That doesn't mean I think a neighborhood should be turned into slums on this situation, and that doesn't mean I support the crime and violence that often goes with these activities under the current criminalization scheme that we have. However, the reason I find Eric Larson's quote, which he ends his letter by saying, everyone deserves a safe place to sleep, eat, and live a good life without poverty, I mean, it sounds a little bit like the Citizens Committee. They love to make these statements. I'm sure Mike Rotkin would say exactly the same thing. And probably even Mary Beth Campbell might say something like that. Maybe not. She's the conservative member of the city council. But the same council... And the same mayor that is enforcing a law and is about to enforce an injunction that will drive protesters of the law away from public view in front of city council, as I understand it, in front of city hall, these same people who say this really have no interest in doing anything that will change the situation. So, for instance, Eric is a very significant voice in the Resource Center for Nonviolence, which has a major voice in some aspects of city policy. Scott Kennedy was the co-founder, supposedly an opponent of the sleeping ban, and yet a voter for this injunction to harass and disband the protesters in front of City Hall. Larson, as far as I know, has never come out publicly to criticize the city council's inaction on this issue. He has never publicly supported protesters of any sort around the sleeping ban or camping ban. I am not aware that he's done anything in this regard, except, I guess, this letter, maybe it's a good first step.
I'm surprised that the neighborhood association at Lower Ocean Street wouldn't be very prime supporters of a campground for homeless people, since their neighborhood seems to be inundated with a lot of of the negative aspects of homeless people being forced to live on the streets and winding up disproportionately in their neighborhood. And Eric Larson being a leader of this community, why he's not at the forefront of finding funding for this campground, I'm at a loss to explain it.
Yeah, well, I'd like to point out that maybe it was a fluke. I did call and interview Eric Larson on this show in the John Malkin controversy. Again, Malkin was the most liberal member of the Citizens Police Review Board, who for months tried to get responses from the police department and from the board about how come the chief was adopting his own procedures in violation of existing orders around Citizens Police Review Board complaints. Anyway, I talked to Larson about a confrontation he had, or let's say a criticism that he made publicly about John Malkin, which I felt sounded pretty phony to me and pretty suspect. And he has a right to say anything he wants. Eric is a citizen. Eric is a person. Eric has a voice. He can say whatever he wants. What really was phony and bogus was the response of the Citizens Police Review Board, which was to tell Eric, if you have a specific charge, make it. Otherwise, you know, we're not going to worry about it. Instead, they went into a great fluster and flutter and worried about how the chief was going to be offended and so forth. That's Police Chief Steve Belcher. Malkin saw this and eventually, or soon thereafter, resigned. I called Larson, talked to him about the issue on the air, and he was quite forthcoming. I was quite impressed. Larson and I have not been on the best of terms. He physically battered me, if you want to use the word.
From the Resource Center for Nonviolence?
You got it. He didn't batter me in terms of like aggressive battering, but it was. I attempted to attend a meeting, actually to meet someone at a Resource Center for Nonviolence event, and he was one of the heavies that was assigned to kind of shove me away and push me out the door. He assumed I was coming to, quote, stir up trouble. This was around 1994 when Kennedy, as mayor, was wearing two hats rather awkwardly as banner of the beggars and, of course, guided by Gandhi, a very interesting combination, which still has not been adequately explained to me. I'm still working that one out. Kennedy was one of the main reasons we have the current ask for a dime after dark twice, go to jail for up to 6 months law on our books. I'm not aware, by the way, that it has ever been enforced to that extent. Let's give the police credit or give somebody credit for not acting like total idiots, but there it is, to intimidate us and to intimidate those who are poor. Anyway, Larson and I had a confrontation at this event because Kennedy was, you know, I don't know if we would say his hero or his ally or his pal or anything. Anyway, he didn't want, people were giving out flyers outside. I attempted to come in. They wanted me to pay money for this event, even though the event was over and I was meeting someone there. And other people were coming and going, and I was singled out, and Larson and a bunch of others, kind of, including Chris Matthews, I might add, essentially were shoving me into a corner and shouting at me and demanding I leave and so forth. And I said, no, I'm not going to leave. And eventually the person, in whose church this was happening, came over and said, come on in, you're our guest. So, but Larson, as I said, has also attempted to make up for this kind of, I don't know if he's attempted to make up for this kind of behavior, he has made up for this kind of behavior to some extent by his willingness to speak openly on these issues when we talk. I appreciate open communication, even from someone like Rotkin. I mean, Rotkin has been deplorable at public city council meetings, but if I come into his office, he will frequently have lengthy dialogues with me, which I try to record, by the way.
Yeah, and he appeared on your show, is that not
true?
And
he has appeared on my show, quite right, Becky. He is, by the way, slated for a debate, which was going to...
It's very different from, say, like Cynthia Matthews, who will not consent to be interviewed. Mary Beth Campbell, who
I've never really tried to interview Mary Beth Campbell.
Sprints out of the meetings to avoid any confrontation with anybody that might be there.
Right, well, anyway, there is an interview with Rotkin that may be coming up soon. Not an interview, a debate. Laura Karate has a Monday show from 2 to 4, which she wants to have Rotkin and Rotkin, you, I, and Linda LeMaster, Becky, debate Rotkin on the issue of the sleeping ban. We were going to have Robert Flory in my place, but I think she wants me. But she's recently gotten into ill health, and she needs more time to prepare that show. For those of you who are interested in the forthcoming Rotkin debate, it's not going to be this Monday. It may be a week from Monday, if the mayor agrees. We have to record it also at another location because the current studio facilities don't really provide for that possibility. But we're going to try to do a recorded debate and then broadcast it on the air. I'm not going to try to fool you. There's going to be anything new on the subject. I mean, we've all heard Michael Rodkin endlessly, just as you probably heard me endlessly. But hopefully, maybe there'll be some new developments around the injunction. And there is the attorney who came to town, Larry Hilgus, is that his name?
Hildes.
Hildes. You want to tell us about that, Becky?
Oh, he was great, yeah. He and Kate Wells met with the protesters at City Hall to discuss legal strategies, and we're discussing the possibility of, a very likely possibility, I might add, of seeking a federal injunction against the camping ban law, specifically the sleeping portion and the covering up of blankets portion. When we explained to him some of the things that were going on here, people being cited with a misdemeanor, arrested, taken to jail, and then this pattern of these charges being dropped back to an infraction and people released.
Or just being dropped entirely. Our most recent political prisoner, Sandra Roth, who was in jail over the last weekend, was arrested on the so-called misdemeanor provision of the sleeping ban law, 6.36.050 of our municipal code, which makes it illegal to sleep twice within 48 hours after 11 o'clock at night.
And they never even filed charges in her case.
She was released on Monday without charges. That has been done before, but usually the practice is to arrest someone on a misdemeanor, since you're not allowed to arrest them on an infraction, and then suddenly to have the charge reduced when you get out, so you don't have the opportunity to have a public defender or a jury trial, which would be provided if you were engaged in defending against a misdemeanor. It should be pointed out, of course, that I would criticize as well if they kept the misdemeanor charge, though for other reasons, namely that it's preposterous to spend court money and time, and also to subject people to the possibility of extended imprisonment for two instances of sleeping publicly within 48 hours.
You don't have to be a big intellectual giant to figure this one out. People need to sleep, and people in homes, it's not that big an issue, but obviously it affects homeless people adversely, disproportionate to how it affects people who have homes.
There are a number of myths that were spread by this Karen Clark story and the subsequent editorial the next day. Becky wrote a nice response to it, which he's issuing as a press release, I guess, and I am trying to write a flyer on the issue where I'm going to take the Sentinel story and then just go through the distortions 1, 2, 3, 4. Most people who read my flyers, and that may include a lot of people who are listening to the show, have heard these arguments before, and it's always kind of difficult for me because I don't want to repeat the same stuff. And because I don't want to repeat the same stuff, I think what I'd like to do, Becky, is press on with, for example, an interview with the folks from Santa Barbara. We have a little tape on them, and we have another hour to go here, but there's a lot of stuff I'd like to get put out over the air. Is there something more you want to say on this subject?
No, let's hear it. You listeners out there, turn your radio up, because these guys are good.
Well, yeah, I got to also warn you, though, that these tapes are not too well edited, so bear with us. This is homeless activism in the raw, and these folks are, again, we're talking protest Bob, or beaming Bob Hansen from Santa Barbara, who's been arrested probably more times than Robert Flory, which is really quite an accomplishment, for homeless causes. He's run for mayor several times in Santa Barbara. He was at the forefront of helping change the sleeping ban in Santa Barbara in 1986, when they actually got Santa Barbara's city to strike the sleeping provisions of the law, and essentially redefine the ban as being against camping, where camping meant like stoves and tents and things like that.
In fact, Santa Cruz City Council should take close note and look at Santa Barbara's camping ban law, where it says specifically states explicitly that camping is not sleeping.
Actually, unfortunately, that's not true anymore, but that was true in 1986 when the law passed, until 1989 when a judge ruled that camping was sleeping and vice versa, in an attempt to make it easier for authorities to prosecute these cases. There's a bad law in Santa Barbara now. The point that I have is that he was instrumental in helping change the law, and that he's a hardcore guy. He's also a pretty funny guy.
I'm just saying that the way that the wording of this camping ban law in Santa Barbara
definitely
would be a very good model for modifying the Santa Cruz camping ban law.
Yeah, in fact, we have presented that proposal to the city council.
also not in Karen Clark's article.
Yeah, I mean, and we presented it to Karen Clark, as a matter of fact. I gave her a copy of the proposal. I gave her a copy of the camping ban, the sleeping ban. And I said, we're not trying to get everybody camp anywhere and everywhere, as Mike Rodkin continues to lie about. The lie about that he is. He may call me a lying
dog.
He calls me a lying... Well, he says anyone who
consider the source, Robert.
He calls me, calls me a lying dog in a recent City on a Hill story where he responds with his usual mass of diversory statements to basic facts that I present, A, B, C, and D. However, what we're talking about now are the Santa Barbara activists, so let's see what they have to say.
12:30 in the morning, May 14th, in front of City Hall, night 76 of the City Hall sleepout. And it's the spirit of 76 here with Cobblestone Colin.
Oh, no.
Dark
no,
of Night
no,
Deke.
Tomorrow.
Of course, beggar-backer Becky here. Not to mention the vicious beaming Bob Hansen, or Protest Bob, as you sometimes call. Hi, Bob.
I'm on a silence vow, a vow of silence.
So. Monkish Bob is now on a vow of silence. These are men from Santa Barbara, only a day and a half late, but better late, actually 2 days late, but better late than, oh, thank you, Bob. Better late than never.
You know what? Robert, do you ever stop working?
Robert,
well,
you know, in Colorado, where they had the boycott of Colorado, and they tried to get an initiative going, we should do that. Boycott California. We need to get an initiative and vote on just sleeping law for the 1998 election year.
Well, you know, interesting theory, Bob, although I should point out to you that this, unfortunately, is a municipal issue, and you can't preempt it with a state law. Though I suppose you could have a state bill of rights provision, perhaps.
Yeah. Well, we should boycott cities and counties and the California. And have initiatives in cities and counties and California, state, and vote on it, you know, because I think most people would agree that people are going to sleep at night. They are. And so they would probably say, well, why don't other people?
Well, they should go sleep in Fresno. I think that's probably the basic line of most, or some middle-class people. But, you know, I mean, I'm always up for discussions on this question. I'm not terribly hopeful about initiatives. They require lots of registered voters, and usually very organized campaigns with lots of paid signature gatherers, but who knows? It looks like
an idea. Enough Nancy came up with that idea.
Enough said Nancy?
Yeah.
Cool.
Democrats used to suck an egg, Robert.
Oh, cool. Always nice to hear from Enough said Nancy.
Steal their thunder.
Hold it. We have the somewhat intoxicated Cobblestone Colin speak
up. No. Don't say that.
Oh, I won't say that. But go ahead.
No, but did you say that on tape?
Would I ever say such a thing on tape? Are you kidding? A man of my circumspection and circumcision. Well, never mind.
The man just ate. He's very sober.
Okay, what's the date? You got to plug it in.
Oh, I know. It's already on tape. Date is on tape. What have you got to tell us, Cobblestone?
Okay. The idea of Cobblestone Colin is to throw the Guinness World Book of Records drum circle in San Diego on August 12th during the Republican National Convention.
Uh-huh.
And steal their thunder.
Drum up dole, huh?
Drum up dole. And that's a good quote. Who was that from? Becky somebody or other.
Becky.
Becky Hudson. I'm usually called.
Yeah, but steal their thunder and then use that for Bob's idea as a stepping stone for this initiative on the 1998.
Well, that's good. You know, I think
go
the Republican
ahead,
convention
Deke,
would
AKA
be extremely
JM.
Dull.
You're listening to a rather fragmentary conversation with several homeless activists from Santa Barbara who've arrived and actually made their way up to San Francisco a day or two later. Actually, that was yesterday at my sentence modification hearing, which I suppose we should do a little bit of talking about. I was actually going to play some tape on that. We haven't talked about that yet, right?
No, we have not talked about it. Plenty to talk about, too.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, before we do, because that may go into a lot of stuff, I want you to hear a little bit of a very brief conversation with Ron Howard I had this morning. Ron Howard is with the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program. And why is this important? Well, it really sounds pretty much like the same old we ain't got much shelter thing, but I have proposed to people at the City Hall sleepout that they apply to Ron and the Interfaith Satellite Shelter Program for shelter, and that Ron will have to say, we ain't got no shelter, folks. this is a good defense against the sleeping ban, because if you have no legal place to be and you can have a shelter service provider attest to it, you may have a necessity defense in court, and you also may have a defense against the injunction as well. We'll have to find out about that. That's perhaps a little more questionable. But here's Ron Howard and his recent statements on, at least this morning, on what the situation is with emergency shelter.
I'm talking to Ron Howard of the Interface Satellite Shelter Program. Hi, Ron.
Good morning.
Thanks for taking a few moments out here. What exactly is the extent of the ISSP program at the moment? How many folks get in, and how does that work?
Well, we've got two groups of 14 that go to various churches in the community. That would be for a total of 28 people, of course, here in North County in Santa Cruz. And then we have an additional 14 that are in the program in Watsonville. However, as you know, it's been raining this week, so we've been kind of stretching our boundaries. And if the facility is large enough, I'll contact the church and find out if it's permissible if we can send an extra 10 or 15 people. So we're doing what we can to get as many people out of the weather as we can.
Are folks, in fact, still getting wet in your view? Or?
Yes, realistically speaking. There's just not enough shelter for the need that's out there right now.
Mm-hmm. Now, is it fair to say that the kind of the drop-in part of it, other than your willingness to extend it, is sort of very limited? I mean, should I advise people to come down and try to get shelter, or should I tell them that they're likely to be filled? What message should I put out?
And it's an unfortunate message, is that we have very limited resources during the summer, and we can't serve the population as we do in the wintertime, you know, when we have the armories open and we have six groups going out, and of course both armories can accommodate a total of approximately 250 people, so we have a much more expansive program.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I'm going to have to be honest and say that it's probably better for them to look for alternatives. We're running at maximum capacity right now.
And it's pretty much the folks who've already arranged in advance to have those spaces pretty much have them, right?
Well, we're going a lot harder line this summer and going for the people who have the greatest need.
Mm-hmm.
Single mothers, people who have infirmities of some sort, and other people who are greater risk out in the community. Instead of putting that on the streets, we're trying to get some shelter for them, but it's a very limited number.
I'm on a line to Katzenjammer Keith McHenry.
Yes, I was. I was on the line to Katzenjammer Keith McHenry. However, that comes a bit later in the show. Right now, we've got Becky Johnson, who was reporting on the scene up at San Francisco yesterday. You went up there with photographer Charlie Phillips to video the whole affair. This is the sentence modification hearing of your favorite talk show host, myself, Bathrobes Pierre Robert Norris. I was, of course, being called into court for completion of a sentence, or actually beginning my jail sentence in San Bruno Jail or Santa Rita. We weren't sure. We're still not sure where it's going to be, for the crime of violating a court injunction, to wit, serving free food to the homeless in Civic Center Plaza. I, having the distinction, along with Sandy Loringer and Brian Flanagan Staley, of being the only people I know of ever being tried by a jury, found guilty, and sentenced to jail for, in essence, serving people free food. That trial happened for me last February 1994, and I was found guilty, and I've been appealing it. The appeals failed, and I went back into court to attempt to have my sentence reduced to zero. And Becky and various other folks came north with me in solidarity and support. Thank you, Jim Costner, Just Man Jim, hey. Thank you, Crossroads Chris Brazda, for bringing up your vehicle and bringing people up there. Thank you, Peppercorn Penny, for doing your help in bringing up people to that event. And thank you all the other folks who came along. But maybe rather than toot my own horn, which I love to do, let's let Becky toot my horn, or perhaps whatever she wants to do.
Well, this the charge that you were convicted on, which was violating an injunction, which the city of San Francisco